Hi, I'm Malcolm Nichols.
And I'm Richard Ayling.
And this is Man Reimagined, a podcast where we, as men, attempt to reimagine ourselves in the 21st century.
How can we respond to the big questions that we're facing, both within ourselves and within society, and make sense of this ever-changing world?
We don't have all the answers, but we do want to create a conversation. So join us moving forward as a man reimagined.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Man Reimagined podcast with myself, Richard Ayling, and my good friend, Malcolm Nichols. And this week we're accompanied by another friend of mine, Gary Joplin. We're building on the last 2 weeks where we've been diving into this fascinating topic, to me at least, of emotions and embodiment. And we've tried to make sense of these two topics and talk about touch. But we thought it would be a really good idea to bring in another fresh perspective and another man to the mix. So I immediately thought of my friend Gary. He's someone that I'll let introduce himself. But we met about 2 or 3 years ago working together in China. And he gave me a profound experience into embodiment, let's loosely term it. And I had an amazing breakthrough and a really, really good time, shall we say. So I'll let him expand on kind of what he does and what that looks like and expand on this topic and see where it goes, basically. But I'm really happy to welcome you, Gary, and hear your input on a topic that is, I know, dear to your heart and something that you're, you know, working professionally in now for close to 20 years, I believe. So heartfelt welcome from both me and Malcolm. How's it going? And yeah, who are you for those listeners that haven't come across your work yet? And how did you get into this line of work?
Great. Thanks, Richard. And thanks, Malcolm. It's really good to be together with you guys. And I'm really highly interested in this topic and also how those two topics actually come together, embodiment and emotion. So it's a pleasure to be asked to look at those together. I'm an American, but I live in Germany. I've lived over here for about 20 years, actually. And the work that I do, I would call myself a somatic coach or a somatic facilitator, which probably sounds a little bit bizarre, but that has to do with actually kind of guiding people gently back into a greater awareness within their own physical body. So kind of calling people back home into more of a felt sense in the body. And most of us have some kind of a body sense of awareness that we walk around with all the time. It's not like most people are walking around with no sense in their body, but my job I see is sort of heightening that and bringing attention into places where there's less or no awareness, and also bringing an awareness of the emotional state into connection with the physical state. There's where I see a really, really strong need in our society that many of us are not just disconnected from the body, but we're also disconnected from our emotional state in connection to the body. So that would be kind of a general framing of what I do. And I work with groups, men's groups, mixed groups, and also do individual coaching with people just to dive a bit more deep.
Hey Gary, it's Malcolm here. So yeah, very nice to have you on board. And just so everybody who's listening knows, Gary and I met about 5 minutes ago. So I'm learning as you guys are. and so my first question to you, Gary, and that was deliberate. You know, Richard and I deliberately kept me in the dark a little bit because I know that for other people who are listening, it's going to, you know, I'm hopefully going to ask the questions that somebody who doesn't know you might want to ask. So the first question I've really got is, how do you get people into their bodies? I mean, and the second question alongside that is what is the actual benefit of doing that? Like why do we want to get into our bodies and how do you do it?
Great. So I'll answer the second question first. I think why we want to do that, I'll draw a little bit on what I heard from your last two podcasts also. You brought in some really lovely information about how it's not about just, you know, feeling your emotion and then reacting out of it. It's actually about sensing into what's happening in the physical body, noticing that, being able to name that, and not judging it or not making up a story about it, just actually naming and sensing what's actually arising in the physical body as the emotion is arising. And how helpful that is, just to be able to keep that layer of information separate from the story that I might want to make about it. So that already seems to be really an important point that I'd like to highlight. I would agree with that totally. And a second step I would like to say that's really beneficial when we're having an emotion and we want to kind of frame it and want to be able to digest it. I'm also interested in looking at how we digest emotions that are still lying locked and in frozen layers in our body. So Richard, I know you've brought in a couple of the podcasts this idea about collective trauma and information that lies beyond our grasp of our cognitive mind at this moment in time. So information that's kind of in the past that's showing up in our present as tension or as an unfeeling or as a dissociation in the body. And those are all realms that I'm very interested in looking at. So I think it's not only important that we start to feel and work on embodiment so that we're aware of what's happening right now with my current experience, but also what is the hidden information that I'm not aware of that's also influencing every single interaction I have on an unseen level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you. And then, so there's a great description and distinction. And then, so the second part is of that question was how do you do that? Like, how do you get people to have those present time experiences and those connections with the past?
That's a different process, of course, for each person. I mean, I like to be very individual about that. If I'm working with one person, I'm definitely attuning to their body and what they might need. But generally speaking, there are a couple of principles that I always like to bring in. And the first one is re-invoking a state of pleasure in the body. So however that happens, I often invite people to yawn as the first thing that they would do, just to invite more space and kind of a sense of relaxation into the body, that you're kind of clearing your inner screen of all the junk that's on there, like yawning to just get more space and clear the deck kind of. And then I usually will, my process also involves step-by-step awakening, a deeper sensitivity. And the way to do that, in my world at least, is to do small movements, sometimes big movements as well, but smaller movements to start to focus my attention into various corners of the body. Like maybe I might invite someone to just move their hand, move the fingers, and watch them for a moment, and then now feel what the bones are doing as you do that. And now feel the layer of the skin. And I'm doing that very fast right now. I would go much slower if I were leading that actually, but just inviting people to bring a deeper felt sense of awareness into a part of the body that they feel anyway all the day, the whole day, but in a more heightened state. With that as a departure point, then I would move more specifically into parts of the body and then look at, okay, where is there a part of the body that I don't feel? Where is there, like if I'm looking at the high rise of my body, where are their lights on and where are their lights off? Which floors are completely blank and which floors are like screaming with a lot of light? And how can I bring balance back into that I'm able to feel into my whole physical structure?
Thanks for that. I liked what you said about it being an individual process. I mean, I teach yoga and I know that I can teach a class to like 20, 30 people, but actually each person's got their own unique needs and their own sort of limitations. And so it's helpful to have a one-on-one session, right? And then to be able to structure your own kind of class for yourself, depending on what you need, once you know how it works. I mean, would you say it's the same in what you're trying to do? Like you can...
Yeah.
You know, you once you bring awareness to people, then and some life and some awareness is the word I'm looking for, actually, then they can start to practice on their own. Or is it always something that you feel needs to be guided? Like, how can we kind of self-teach and move into a space on our own around this? It's a big question for me.
That's a great question, because I think it's neither, it's both. I think it's actually great to be able to dive deeper with some guidance, and then to take that experience and bring it back into your own daily practice. Or it's also sometimes really great to do a group class where somebody isn't completely shining the spotlight on you and your experience, but you're allowed to have the experience in a deeper way with a guided process. So for me, I find both really helpful. And that was also a big part of my own journey, and still is a big part of my own journey. Being able to receive, and also then being able to digest that material on my own.
I love that. And I wanted to get into your background and your story a little bit as well, because there are some men listening to this also basically hearing French and going, what? No idea what this means. And there are some people going, wow, I can totally get that. So it feels like, you know, not humans, not just men. There's different stages of awareness, and there's resistance to this kind of thing, right? For lots of different reasons we've tried to kind of look at a little bit. How did you come into this, and why is this kind of your calling, so to speak? Why are you so able to do this? I'm aware you have a background as a dancer, and I'm wondering what factors brought you into this world, especially the curiosity around the deeper, you know, depths of what's kind of trapped inside as well. So feel free to go on and really share, like, how you came into this and why it's important to you. I'd love to know.
Yeah, great. That's a roundabout way, I would say. And the cover story, what it looks like on the surface, is that I had this very intense career as a professional classical ballet dancer that allowed me to dive really, really deeply into my body on a certain level, like the functional level, the mechanical level of like how to optimize this physical structure for ultimate flexibility, ultimate speed, ultimate strength, ultimate grace, all those things arising in the same moment. That's the work of an athlete, and something I wouldn't have realized until I got into that world. But at the same time, when I actually started studying acting in university, and that's what led me into dance, which is a bit strange, but that was the doorway. And at that time, I also felt within myself such a strong emotional amplitude. Like, my emotions were all over the place and I didn't feel grounded at all. I was just like, wow, anything that comes along makes me go, wah! Either I'm really sad, or I'm really angry, or I couldn't really find an equilibrium. So I started to meditate at the age of 21. And that was, as anyone who started meditating knows, at the beginning, really difficult and really a challenge. I used to set the timer on my microwave back in 1988 to for 5 minutes, and I would manage about two before I would go, like, oh, for God's sake, when is that thing gonna buzz? So I have really a lot of compassion with anyone that, like, looks at what we're talking about and goes, like, yeah, that's so far away from my experience, I don't even know how to start. So first of all, my invitation would be to start wherever you are and be easy with yourself and take whatever steps it takes to just start walking and keep walking, and whatever shows up, keep walking. That's the important thing. So after I did get a little bit better with meditation over time, and now I will sit for 18 days at a time in silence and meditate for over 12 hours a day. So that's a different experience, and I don't expect anyone to do that. I'm just sort of giving the range of possibility where it can go also. So if that scared anyone, just relax. You can also do 5 minutes for your microwave. That's also perfectly fine. In my path as a ballet dancer, I also came across some really interesting phenomenon. So as a professional athlete, then I was also doing yoga and doing Pilates and doing Feldenkrais and doing a lot of different cross-training methods to optimize what I was doing on the stage, and also going to the gym and lifting weights. I mean, if you're lifting ballerinas over your head, that looks like it's really easy, but you know, it's still a human being with a lot of pounds that you need to lift over your head. So there's a certain amount of functional strength that you need for that. In that process, I noticed when we were performing, I was like, interesting. I'm surrounded by highly trained bodies, but I also feel some people who aren't really there. Like lights are on, but nobody's home. And even on the stage, I would encounter other dancers where I was like, dunk, 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 where are you? Like the body's functioning at a very high level, but there's no synchronization of their relational space, their physical body, and their emotional space. Now, I wouldn't have been able to frame that in my early 20s that way. Like that, now my work is working therapeutically all these years. Now I see what's going on. But that started me on a journey of looking inward. What is my inner experience? What is my outer experience while I'm dancing? That was kind of like my hidden agenda. Like, ooh, how does the audience feel today? What does the space between us feel like? That's interesting. What arises in me when I'm approaching really close this dancer? Or this one, it's a totally different experience. So that just awakened my curiosity. And out of that experience, once I stopped dancing, I'm 54 years old now. I stopped dancing professionally full-time at the age of 40. And already in the last 10 years of my career, I had started moving away from pushing and using a lot of pressure on the body and starting to look in a different way. How can I invite ease, efficiency, and an organic way of feeling more deeply, that I'm not going to be sitting in a wheelchair in 10 years. You know, I have friends who have hip replacements that are my age and younger, people that have steel rods in their lumbar spine because they've blown out their discs. And I just looked at that and said, no, thank you. I would prefer to actually notice what's happening in my body before something catastrophic arises. So I think I'm wandering a lot. I'm wandering around a little bit, but that's at least a framework, like what developed my interest in looking inward in the body.
I'm loving that journey that you went on, Gary, and particularly, you know, it was really interesting hearing you talk about your observations of the other dancers that you had. And I guess, so I'm quite curious now, for you, having worked in this industry for the length of time that you had, and you know, reflecting on the fact that this is a Man Reimagined podcast, and we're exploring men and where we're at, you know, so what's your personal experience of where you think, I mean, this is a gross generalization, obviously, but you know, how do you feel men are in their relationship with their bodies? Where do you think we're at right now?
Well, that is a broad question, but it's a great one also, because I think we all kind of learned. I'll go back to this inward outward, what I was just speaking about. I was thinking about it this morning. As a boy, I learned in my body to play sports. So I was constantly looking at what was happening outside of me and reacting to it. I need to be faster. I need to be stronger in that moment. There's a constant looking outward, which I think is a bit the way that males are kind of trained to view the world. Like, look at what's happening out there and have the right reaction to it, no matter what. You need to be strong and stand up and be ready for whatever comes. And there's not so much, at least not in my upbringing, of looking at what's happening on the inside and also giving that any kind of credence. Whereas I think if you look at least in Western culture, the way that those people who are born into a female body are kind of conditioned, most of the time, there's also a greater sense of like, how are you feeling and what's happening on the inside of you and touching into your emotions and what does the relational space feel like? And this is like, that's already a very, very early conditioning that we receive. So I think how we end up being who we are as men is also arising from, at least partially, from that kind of conditioning. But back to your question you asked, I think we're it's across the spectrum, but I feel like that there's a new possibility right now. Like I see more and more men not only looking at how to use their bodies as an optimization for strength or power, but also as a tool for greater self-reflection. That's where I would love to see manhood going, that we are opening ourselves up into a greater spectrum of who we are, both on both ends of the polarity spectrum of what we term as masculine and what we term as feminine, feeling both of those in their fullness and everything in between. So, I mean, unfortunately, in the world of embodiment, I sometimes go to seminars and I listen to people speak about embodiment and I go, wow, you're only talking about doing better yoga poses, or you're only talking about like how to look better and maybe feel better in the body, or stop aging, or it's always with a in order to. And I'm where I would love to see embodiment heading, and what I try to envision in my work is, yes, by all means, let's let the body feel better. Let's build strength. Let's build capacity for flexibility. Let's build coherence in our fascia. Let's build all of those things, and let's let the intelligence of the body take its rightful place alongside the intelligence of our cognitive ability and the intelligence of our emotional ability. And I know you spoke about a little bit about this in your podcast about emotion, and I'd even like to heighten that even more to really that we begin to feel the distinction between the emotional intelligence and the physical intelligence, and they're very interwoven and yet they're distinct. And I think our cognitive ability in the Western world, the way that we kind of need to function, we need to be fast in our mind. We need to be on. We need to have the mind, critical mind, constantly on. And, you know, a little less so the emotional intelligence, and a lot less so the physical intelligence. So I would see my work right now is bringing those back into an alignment and a synchronization, that all three are online at the same time without the cognitive mind constantly driving, not constantly running the show.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. And yeah, I love that. And it leads me into asking the next question, which is, you know, you've used the word felt sense a number of times, which I think for a lot of people that's probably a term they're not all that familiar with. Right. And I wondered, and because this is in support of what you've just talked about this differentiation between emotions, what we're experiencing in our emotional body and our physical body. Because I think, certainly from my experience, you know, I mean, for myself, but also for a lot of men, right? There's often what I feel in my body is emotions, right? So therefore, that's where the mistake comes, right? Or this idea that emotions is the body, right? But actually it's not. It's an experience we have in the body. And the body itself has this other unique sense, which you've called the felt sense. Do you want to describe the felt sense, or give that a go a little bit for us, for me, for everybody?
Yeah, I think it's always helpful to look at kind of qualities, like a felt sense. If I just tune in right now to the skin on my forearm, that's not going to bring me much information. But if I actually tune into the skin, like, okay, I zoom myself in with my awareness down into my forearm, and I now start to feel the temperature of the air through that part of my body, that already gives me a specificity that brings more information, but also centers me in my physical structure. Or I often invite people to, as I said earlier, just moving the hands or moving the feet, and just using a movement to, like, first of all, get us out of our cognitive thinking about and more in a feeling into. That's really the basic point. There, I could think about my arm, or I can feel into my arm. And one is a process that happens on the inside, and one is a looking down from the dome of my brain and analyzing what's happening. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, it does. It's absolutely answers the question. And you know, what came up for me as you were speaking is and it's something that Rich and I have talked about previously, and is this idea that our you know, thoughts are past and future, right? And the body itself is the present moment. And so what you're talking about is this process of the felt sense is like is getting out of the head and into the body, into the felt sense, as a way of coming out of the chaos and the story of these that's going on in our head and into the body to experience what is actually happening here and now in the present moment, real time, in my life. And and yeah, it's a beautiful thing that you're talking about. And you know, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm realizing that this is the kind of, these are the kind of juicy conversations that I just personally love having, because it speaks so much to, you know, my meditation teacher that I've been following for a wee while, his focus is purely on meditating in the body, and the idea that if we can come into the body, the body is where enlightenment exists, right? So for me, it's a really exciting place to explore. In some ways, it's kind of like, you know, as human beings, we spend our life exploring external space, and we miss out on the exploration of our internal space. And everything that you're talking about in this embodiment practice is the exploration of our internal space. So for me personally, it's a super exciting thing. And yeah, so I'm just loving hearing you talk about it, Gary. Rich.
Yeah, thanks, Mal. I second everything you just said. I was wondering about the breath, because we've spent three podcasts on this and we've not mentioned it once. And I come from a, you know, breath work sort of background, right? That was my way into the body. And I'm wondering, I mean, I could talk about it for hours, but that's not what I'm here to do. I'm wondering, Gary, on your relationship to the breath and how relevant you think it is to finding our way into the body, because we haven't talked about it so far, and yet I think it's key for me. And it's also something that a lot of people can relate to, because we talk about it in meditation. You know, people like Wim Hof have made different forms of breath work, you know, quite famous and accessible and almost household now. So as a way in for people, I think it might be helpful to hear your relationship to that and how you use it in perhaps your own practice and how you work with other men as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely essential. Breath work, and not to make it like this holy thing, breath work, but like just being able to connect to the breath and the different techniques that one can use to do that are absolutely essential. The breath is kind of the gateway between our cognitive mind and the physical body. If the breath is not involved, there's kind of a foggy layer that we never move through. So for me, the breath really is the connective tissue, or is the connective cable through which we can move from our cognitive state into a more felt sense in the physical body. So whenever I'm teaching any kind of class, or even any kind of a private session, I will always invite the whole room, not only into feeling how they're breathing, like, and there are many, many techniques to do that. And it, for me, it doesn't really matter which one. I like to have a big toolbox and grab the tool that feels right in that moment. So if someone is in a lethargic state or a little bit like, oh, I'm really tired tonight, then obviously I wanted to invite a breath, meet them where they are first, but also invite them into a state where more energy comes into the system. And maybe then I do a faster breathing technique that allows them to re-energize. Or if someone's nervous system is completely overactivated, then I want to meet them where they are in that activation and slowly guide them to maybe finding more space, spaciousness, and more slowness, like what is the tempo of my breathing that supports my looking more deeply into my body? So that's kind of the beginning and the end for me. The breath is there to allow a deeper looking and listening into the body. And I highly recommend any breath technique that allows you to do that. And I also would say my personal experience is also with yoga or anything, just you don't have to make it too holy. You know, it's a tool, it's a technique, and it doesn't need to become the only thing that you do. It's one thing that supports you on your journey.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with the holiness that people are talking about breathwork with at the moment. So thank you for highlighting that. And for the giggle earlier around using your microwave as a meditation timer, I just need to clarify one thing. It's not super important, but was the microwave on at the same time that you were meditating? Is that hum kind of...
Okay, and I don't have a microwave anymore. Like, even the thought of me having a microwave right now in my house is very funny. Like, anyway.
Okay. So, all right. Thank you for clarifying that. I can rest in peace. I wanted to switch gears a little bit to the second podcast and this topic of touch, because you work with men and you work with touch, and you and I had a conversation where you shared something really incredibly important and interesting story, I think. And I'd love to share that again. And I guess the way into it was my question of, is it in any way relevant that you as an openly gay man, like, what does that bring to the table, you know, and how relevant is that? That was my question for you into terms of embodiment and working with other men. And I'm not sure how relevant it is, actually. It's not something that I thought to mention in this podcast instinctively as we've been talking, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just, okay, he's gay. Okay, he's straight, like, you know? So, but, and right. Yet that was, when I asked you personally before this, it led to a really interesting story, which I'm sure you remember. So how you work with men, just as a man, and touch is really the grander context. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Because as we said in the podcast last week, men struggle with touch, we're uncomfortable with it. And yet it's one profound way into the body, and this idea of connection, which I think is key and we're missing, is, you know, we need to access that more. So rambling question, but you know where I'm going.
Yes. I know. I think it's, I mean, I can only speak from my experience. I don't think it's generally speaking, that, as you say, it's not important if you're gay or straight, that's not a factor. But what is important is maybe how I see myself and what parts of me I bring into contact and what parts of me I don't bring into contact. And maybe I'll come back to that point. What you were speaking about, Richard, I'll just dive into the story. So a few years ago, I'm also now a director and a choreographer, as well as working with people somatically and leading workshops. And a lot of my work revolves around what I would call community dance, or using dance as a medium and theater as a medium to actually look at societal questions. And I'm much more interested there in dealing with real people as opposed to dealing with professionals. So I wouldn't ask a group of professional dancers or actors to look at that question. I look at the questions I'm looking at. I invite people from the community. So I did a piece a few years ago with a group of men who are either living with cancer, living with the effects of cancer after maybe it's not active in their system, or those who have had cancer affect them in their personal lives in some way. And that anyway was a very deep and rich process for me to spend 9 months with this group of men, slowly allowing them to dive deeper into their own experience, and on all those levels, on a cognitive level, on an emotional level, and also really just what was happening on a physical level. So those were all three levels that we were chewing through. And in one of the very first meetings with this group of men, and it was a very wide range. I had a 16-year-old who was very interested in the topic because of something in his family. There was a man also who his wife had been in a former project of mine, a woman with cancer, and she died during that process. So part of his healing was to actually join this group and to be able to process all of those emotions and those feelings that were coming up. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing to have him in this group of men, him holding others and others holding him in whatever was arising. Also, I had several men who were in their late 60s who had already been through a long journey with cancer and were in a state where things looked relatively good. So it was a bit all over the place as far as who was in the group. But in the very second meeting, and I knew that touch was going to be an issue because it always kind of is between men. We just don't learn how to touch each other in an appropriate way. It always feels a little bit, ooh. And one of the new guys came in a little bit late. So we'd already started an exercise. So he had to dance with me, and he didn't know that I was gay. It's not that I'm wearing a rainbow flag that everyone's like, hey, guess what? I'm the gay guy in the room. So he had no idea. But he came in late, so he actually had to work with me. And the task that I had given them was that one, after a lot of warm up, is that one person would stand in front and one person would stand in back. And for example, I would place my hand between his shoulder blades. And as he started to move his breastbone, I would also follow his movements with my spine. So it was about attuning with each other, the person in front feeling into the person behind them, the person in the back feeling into the person in the front. And it's actually, I did this exercise with you, Richard, as a matter of fact. It usually allows people, when we do it slow enough, to feel very held and connected to in a way that allows them to feel more deeply their own emotional state. So we did this movement, and then I added another layer. Okay, and now you take the elbow. And now just move your hand down onto the side of the waist and move that part of your body. And we finished the exercise, and this man is about 6'4". He's a kickboxer, tattooed all the way across his arms and shoulder, like the kind of guy that I would at least would say, like, I'm not going to mess with him. But he was doing the exercise with me. And as soon as we kind of released out of the exercise, he said, oh, wow, that was so gay. And I thought, wow. I mean, I was happy that he came out with that. And then he immediately apologized. He was like, not knowing that I am, but he apologized. He was like, yeah, sorry. I don't mean to be inappropriate, but that was just too much for me. And so I said, fantastic. Let's all look in the room now. How many people found this difficult to just have another hand placed on your body and moving together and breathing together, like that amount of intimacy, what that does in you? And we might interpret that, but it's just important to know what's arising. And I also then asked, how many of us in this circle learned from our fathers how to have intimate touch between men? And I don't mean intimate sexual, I mean like how to approach another male body without it being about violence or sexuality. Like, what is an appropriate contact with another man that is just alive and emergent and just being with what is? And everyone went, ugh, I didn't learn that from my father. So we had an incredibly rich dialogue I put them off into groups of three. And then we came back in the circle and we're speaking about that. And it just opened up such a great level where a lot of people spoke a lot about their fathers and this deep wish to have had a more, a softer connection to their father, to be able to have a physical connection that wasn't gruff or detached. And that's where I see really where touch is such an important thing between men. And by the way, just for anyone who's, not identifying as gay, here's the ballet dancer, the gay ballet dancer talking about touch, just in case that makes some people in the room go, oh God. That's also a really, really important point that I learned in working with men. So I'm doubling back a little bit, and I hope I'm not going too much off topic. Gentlemen, tell me if I am, but one of the first men's workshops that I was helping to lead, I noticed in the first day, I was leading with two friends of mine who are just shining examples of male humanity, and it's a pleasure to work with them. But I felt myself kind of pulling back a little bit energetically, and I was like, what is that? And I could identify it, and then I brought it into the contact on the next day. I was like, I'm actually protecting all of the straight men in the room from my gayness. I'm pulling that which is essential to my being out of the room as if it doesn't exist, so that I don't have to confront anyone. And I'm not speaking right here about, like, I'm not speaking about being overly effeminate or any of those things that some people might associate with that. I'm really talking about extracting anything that might be triggering for anyone in my being gay, pulling that out, and then feeling completely disassociated from myself. So it was a huge learning experience for me. And also just to bring that into contact with the group. And I opened up and I said, look, this is what's happening for me. The young boy who had to protect himself and hide those parts of myself so I wouldn't get beat up, learned as an adult to hide those things so that I'm not confronting anyone. And just speaking that out and allowing that back into the space, every single man in that room was with me then. There wasn't a dry eye in the room also, but also all the men were like, we welcome you back into the fold of manhood. You are not separate from us. And this was just a powerful thing.
Oh, thanks, Gary. That I think in a way what you've just shared with us has really kind of contained this entire podcast in a way about us as men finding our own expression in whatever way, shape that is, and doing that by connecting into our bodies and using the awareness of our bodies. And, you know, one of the pieces that came up for me is a reiteration. So I think Rich and I try to bring this out in every podcast that we can. You know, the intention with what we're doing is to, with Man Reimagined, is this idea of how are we going to chart our passage forward as men, you know. And what you've just shared in a way is a beautiful example of how I think we can do that, right? By recognizing when we're not honoring who we are and what we are, and giving ourselves permission to do that. But the second bit about that too, which I feel really important, is this: as men, allowing other men to explore that as well. So creating the space, you know, Rich and I talk a lot about circles, and it sounds exactly like what you're in was a men's circle in a different way, right? It's like, you know, holding space as men for other men to authentically step into who they are and what they are. And I have to confess, I'm actually feeling, you know, I'm talking and I'm actually feeling, you know, like in this term of, you know, this conversation about embodiment, if I'm to check in with my body, I'm actually feeling quite emotional, and I can feel the tears in my eyes. I can feel the wholeness in my heart, because, you know, I feel it's like this, what you've just shared and the experience of that and all of this, it's like this is our juice. This is who we are and our richness of our potential as human beings. And you know, it's like if imagine a world where men are stepping up in this way, in ourselves and in the community and within groups, honoring ourselves, honoring each other. It's just so, fuck, it's just beautiful. I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much, Gary. Over to you, Rich.
Yeah, just a second that, I mean, that, especially the second story, which, you know, I hadn't heard, that just dropped this whole conversation to just a level of like, it was just, okay, that's exactly what we're talking about. Like, thank you for that. Because you were speaking my truth. And not that I'm not gay. And it wasn't a question of the gayness in that moment. It was a question of you holding yourself back because of how you're going to relate to the room and how you might make them feel. Like, you know, That's been my story my whole life. Like I love to perform and fuck around and there have been moments when I've, you know, been put back in my box for that, been made to feel like that's not okay. I've been shamed, you know, and there's no blame out there anymore. You know, I understand that we're all just kind of trying to feel safe and make sense of the world, but what you said really landed for me. And I hope that there's a bunch of men out there also going, yeah, I'd like some of that, please. You know, like, especially the second point that Mal made about you expressing yourself and anyone listening and that authentic part of you, but also making sure that other men are able to do the same thing. Like that's the gold. And that's kind of, that's got me choking up in this moment as well. So I'll pipe down as well. And I'll just over to you, Gary, no question. Like, you know, how's this landing? If anything.
Well, it's great. I mean, I'm really enjoying the conversation. I'm enjoying your reflections on it as well. And I'll just pick up right where you were, Richard. So it's about me knowing or us knowing as men, I feel me feeling you feeling me. So this interactivity of a felt sense that we're not like kind of islands moving through our lives and not really feeling each other. Like this, I would love for mankind, for men, that we learn, I don't have to do a lot more than just being present and really being present, feeling you, feeling yourself. Alone, that allows a lot more emotions to be processed, allows whatever's there to arise and be digested in the moment, that we're not carrying it around for the next 20 years. That's an important point. And I just also like to drop that in for, you know, for all of those who are fathers, the work you do on yourself, the work you do to allow more of you to come into contact, you're going to be a walking, living transmission of what it means to be a full spectrum man to all the little men who are coming up. And even if they're not your biological children, I work with a lot of teenagers. And you know what? This again was something that I think is interesting about my path as a gay man. Like, I was like, wow, it's kind of edgy for me to work with teenage guys. They're going to, you know, they're going to be eked out and they're going to have some sort of a weird conversation about me being gay. And it just doesn't show up that way because, I mean, I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy who actually gives a damn and cares about them. And they feel that. They feel that I'm standing there with integrity and that I'm totally 100% behind them discovering themselves and opening up into a new way. And then this other part doesn't even come into the room, you know? So I think it's really important our journey that we're on, each one of us individually. And then how do we share that, that we become kind of a chain of opening.
Hmm. Beautiful. Look, I mean, that just feels like actually a really wonderful place to begin to wrap this conversation up in many ways. I think the way that you sum that up, I've just seen Richard wave his finger and want to have I feel like he wants to ask a question or say something. So I'm going to pass it over to you, Rich. You go.
I hear you, Mal. Yeah, it is a good place to wrap things up. And I'd love to offer Gary the chance to talk about this new book that you're still writing, I believe. This isn't one of those kind of like plugs that you're coming on actually to plug this and that was all like blah, blah, you know, like fuck that. There's a reason that we don't have any adverts on the show, guys. And it's not morally, it's just no one's interested yet. but I'd love you, Gary, to tell us a bit about this book because again, it builds on the work that you're talking about. And before I forget as well, you know, me and Mal are trying to make sense of the world in our little podcast here every Friday. And yet what you just talked about, Gary, is this is a living example of that. Like there's two guys trying to figure it out, but when we bring in other men and we hear and, you know, give space for that, everything just gets better. You know, the collective just kind of grows and there's just a stronger sense of understanding and connection and depth the more we kind of bring more people in. So just thank you for being a part of it. But yeah, you're writing a book and I'm really curious about the topic because it's related.
Great. So, I mean, along with the disclaimer is that maybe it's not going to be a book. Let's see if I actually manage to do it. I'm in the process of writing something and let's hope it turns out to be a book among all the other things that I'm doing at the current moment. Yeah, but the departure point for the book, I would like to look at transgenerational trauma through the lens of my father and his father and the father that came before him. So I'm very much interested in looking at the male line, and that's not the only line we could look at, but in my particular family line, a lot of stuff happened. If I go back in history, there's just a lot of trauma that happened. And probably all of us can relate to that in some part of our ancestral lines. And not to get too deeply into that whole theory, because that's a whole podcast or maybe even a whole course unto itself. But basically, it's about looking at those parts of unintegrated energy or emotions or instances that occurred in my father that live still in me. That was my departure point. Like, what did I have to do as a small boy meeting my father? I had to be able to adjust to the way that he saw the world. So in order to stay in connection, I have to kind of manipulate the way that I see things in order to be able to connect with him. So the places where he's frozen and not feeling requires some kind of a response from me. I either have to also be frozen in that place that we don't meet, or I stay open there and then I constantly meet my father in a place where he doesn't feel himself. Children can't deal with that. That means I learn also to freeze. I mirror that action in my father. And if that already is making sense, that's kind of a basic fundamental principle right now in psychology, and especially somatic psychology. I think we, you know, as children, we're like sponges. We soak up like extremely, extremely clear mirrors, all of the parts in our parents that are online. So with that as a framework, I'm looking at, okay, what are those frozen parts and why are they frozen? Would you like to be more detailed than that? Or is that giving you, like, I'm aware that if I open up a detailed layer, yeah. Okay, so I'll just say a little something more and you can always edit me out. Let's do it that way. two really important things happened in my father's life. When he was at the age of 7, there was a house fire where he was the only child who was pulled out alive, and his sister and his younger brother both died in that fire. So my grandparents witnessed the burning down of not only their home, but losing 2 of their children. That left an indelible mark in the entire system, if we understand constellation work. And I can feel that even if I speak about it, the effects of that, what that must have been like for my grandfather. After that, he became an alcoholic, my grandfather, and was abusive, and a lot of terrible things happened in the family that also left an indelible mark on my father. So I think I was born into a family system where my father, a part of him was already frozen and still busy with trying to process what happened. And whether or not one ascribes to that belief or not, I could feel that in my father. He was very warm and loving, but also on one level frozen, like not, you know, some not there, like, where are you? Then at the age of 4, my uncle, there was an uncle that came along later, was shot in a robbery. And that for me was like kind of the knockout. Like then from that point, and I can feel it in my timeline, my father was a little bit more kind of hanging by a thread to the family structure. So for me as a small boy, right in this time in my life when I was like, I feel like I could conquer the world. I'm, you know, 4 and a half, and I was really fast and really athletic and very quick thinking. I could already read when I was in kindergarten. I was like, ah, come on, world. And then losing the strength and the safety of a male holding, this just kind of vanished for me. And that had really wide-reaching effects on how I deal with myself and my whole emotional structure. So that's probably maybe more detailed than that we wanted, but I think it's been a rich process for me, even if no book comes out of it, diving into what my father's experience was, what might have been the patterns that resulted out of that, and how I needed to react to those, teaches me so much about who I am and who I may not be. So that is just kind of a dive into deeper layers. And let's see what the book ends up being about. Hopefully there will be also some humor in it, and it won't just all be dark and dismal. But what I'm finding actually is a way back to the love to my father. Like I can only say that in that journey, I have moved beyond the space of even having patience or like looking at those things and saying, yeah, well, he did that because of this. That was one layer I had to go through. And now I feel like I'm even beyond that. And when I tune into my father, there are no ripples on the lake of my emotional experience with him. I just feel love and support with and without all of the mistakes that may or may not have been made. But I just feel this warm, strong connection of someone standing behind me saying, I trust you and I stand behind you no matter what. And if that's the end of that kind of a process, then I'm super happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, just from me to you, Gary, without thinking about how anyone else is, you know, interpreting this or hearing this, like, on one level, that sounds quite far out and very deep. But on another level, I'm like, the end result that you just expressed is deeply profound. And if you're going to like continue and actually write this book and people like you are going to continue this work, then one day it doesn't have to sound far out, you know, and then this work can actually be done. And then we don't have to experience this sense of us as men, like floating around like islands around each other and distant from our fathers and frozen. So thank you eternally from the bottom of my heart for what you're doing. Please continue to do it, because it's so necessary and important. And it takes bravery and courage and dedication to actually step into doing that kind of work, because for a lot of people, it's like, wow, I have no idea how to even touch on that. So the years that you've been building towards this, I'm grateful like to see this happen. And I'm curious to, no pressure, but curious to see where it goes.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure also just diving into these topics with you guys. I'm also really thankful that you're taking it on and bringing it into the world. And exactly as you said, the more we do it, the less it becomes a strange thing, the more it becomes this unwinding of our internal frozenness back into this juicy presence that we all might have as a possibility, that we all do have as a possibility, I think is an amazing process.
Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to share your journey, your experience, your knowledge. I've certainly really enjoyed it and got a shit ton out of it. So thank you from my bottom of my heart. And we progress through this, I have a sneaking suspicion that we might hear your voice on this podcast in the near future, should you wish to join us once more, because it's been a real pleasure. Thanks, mate. It's just been gold.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
See you.
From this week's podcast, if there's been anything that's inspired you, challenged you, or simply left you wanting more, then please reach out to Richie and Mal via their Facebook page, Man Reimagined. Just like you, we're trying to get a handle on all these issues and topics. So the more we're able to share and talk about them, I think the better off we're all going to be. Until next time, catch you later.